The tenth revision.
The first question. The love in me is dependent on the outside world. At the same time, I see what you say about being complete within. What happens to love if there is nothing and nobody to recognize and taste it? Who are you without disciples? The first thing, there are two kinds of love. C.S. Lewis has divided love in these two kinds: need love and gift love. Abraham Maslow also divides love in two kinds. First he calls deficiency love, and second he calls being love. The distinction is significant and has to be understood. The need love or the deficiency love depends on the other. It is immature love. In fact, it is not truly love. It is a need. You use the other. You use the other as a means. You exploit. You manipulate. You dominate. But the other is reduced. The other is almost destroyed. And exactly the same is being done by the other. He's trying to manipulate you, to dominate you, to possess you, to use you. To use another human being is very unloving. So it appears only like love. It is a false coin. But this is what happens to almost 99% people. Because the first lesson of love you learn is in your childhood. A child is born. He depends on the mother. His love towards the mother is a deficiency love. He needs the mother. He cannot survive without the mother. He loves the mother because mother is his life. In fact, there is no love. He will love any woman whosoever will protect him, whosoever will help him to survive, whosoever will fill up his needs. The mother is a sort of food that he eats. It is not only milk that he gets from the mother, it is love too, and that too is a need. Millions of people remain childish all their life. They never grow up. They grow in age, but they never grow in their minds. Their psychology remains juvenile, immature. They are always needing love. They are hankering for it like food. The man becomes mature the moment he starts loving rather than needing. He starts overflowing, sharing. He starts giving. The emphasis is totally different. With the first, the emphasis is how to get more. With the second, the emphasis is how to give. And how to give more, and how to give unconditionally. This is growth, maturity coming to you. A mature person gives. Only a mature person can give, because only a mature person has it. Then love is not dependent.
then you can be loving, whether the other is or is not. Then love is not a relationship, it is a state. What happens if all the disciples disappear and I am here? Do you think there will be any change? What happens when a flower blooms in the deep forest, nobody to appreciate it, nobody to know its fragrance, nobody to pass a comment and say beautiful, nobody to taste its beauty, its joy, nobody to share? What happens to the flower? It dies. It suffers, it becomes panicky, it commits suicide. It goes on blooming. It simply goes on blooming. It does not make any difference. Whether somebody passes by or not is irrelevant. It goes on spreading its fragrance to the winds. It goes on. Goes on offering its joy to God, to the whole. If I am alone, then too I will be as much loving as I am with you. It is not you that are creating my love. If you are creating my love, then naturally when you are gone, my love will be gone. You are not pulling my love out. I am showering it on you. It is a gift love. It is a being love. And I don't really agree with C.S. Lewis and Abraham Maslow, because the first love they call love is not love. It is a need. How a need can be love? Love is a luxury. It is abundance. It is having too much life and you don't know what to do with it, so you share. It is having so many songs in your heart that you have to sing them, whether anybody listens or not is not relevant. If nobody listens, then also you will have to sing it. You will have to dance your dance. The other can have it. The other can miss it. But as far as you are concerned, it is flowing. It is overflowing. Rivers don't flow for you. They are flowing, whether you are there or not. They don't flow for your thirst. They don't flow for your thirsty fields. They are simply flowing there. You can quench your thirst. You can miss. That's up to you. The river was not really flowing for you. The river was just flowing. It is accidental that you can get the water for your fields, that you can get water for your needs. It is accidental. A master is a river. The disciple is accidental. The master is flowing. You can partake. You can enjoy. You can share his being. You can be overwhelmed by him. But he is not for you. He was not flowing for you in particular. He was simply flowing. Remember this. And this I call mature love, real love, authentic love, true love. When you depend on the others, there is always misery. The moment you depend, you start feeling miserable. Because dependence is slavery. then you start taking revenge in subtle ways. Because the person you have to depend upon becomes powerful over you. Nobody likes anybody to be powerful over you. Nobody likes to be dependent. Because dependence kills freedom. And love cannot flower in dependence. Love is a flower of freedom. It needs a space. It needs absolute space. The other has not to interfere with it. It is very delicate. When you are dependent, certainly the other will dominate you. And you will try to dominate the other. That's the fight that goes on between so-called lovers. They are intimate enemies. Continuously fighting, husbands and wives, what they are doing. Loving is very rare, fighting is the rule. Loving is exceptional. And in every way they try to dominate. Even through love, they try to dominate. If the husband asks the wife denies. She is reluctant. She is very miserly. She gives but very reluctantly. She wants you to wave your tail around her. And so is the case with the husband. When the wife is in need and asks you, the husband says he is tired. In the office there was too much work, overwork really. And he would like to go to sleep. I have read one letter written by Mullah Nasruddin to his wife. Listen to it. To my dear ever-loving wife, during the past year I have tried to make love to you 365 times, an average of once per day. And the following is a list of the reasons you gave for rejecting me. Wrong week 11 times. It will wake the children 7 times. It is too hot 15 times. It is too cold 3 times. Too tired 19 times. Too late 16 times. Too early 9 times. Pretending to sleep 33 times. Window is open, neighbors might hear 3 times. Backache 16 times. Toothache 2 times. Headache 6 times. Not in the mood 31 times. Baby restless, might cry 18 times. Watch late so 15 times. Mud pack 8 times. Grease on face 4 times. Too drunk 7 times. Forgot to visit the chemist 10 times. Visitors sleeping in the next room 7 times. Just had hair done 28 times. Is that all you think about? 62 times. Dearest, do you think we can improve on our record during the forthcoming year? Your ever-loving husband, Mullah Nasruddin. These are ways how to manipulate, how to starve the other, how to make him more and more hungry, so he becomes more and more dependent. Naturally, women are more diplomatic about it than men, because man is already powerful. He need not find subtle and cunning ways to be powerful. He is powerful. He manages the money. That is his power. Muscular wise, he is more strong. That is his power. Down the centuries, he has conditioned the mind of the woman that he is more powerful and she is not powerful. In every way he has always tried to find a woman who is in every way lesser than him. A man does not want to be married to a woman who is more educated than him, because then the power is at stake. He does not want to marry a woman who is taller than him, because a taller woman looks superior. A man does not want to marry a woman who is too much of an intellectual, because then she argues, and arguments can destroy power. A man does not want a woman who is very famous, then he becomes secondary. And down the centuries, man has asked a woman who is younger than him. Why? Why not the wife can be older than you? What is wrong? But an older woman is more experienced. That destroys power. So man has always asked for a lesser, in every way, a lesser woman. That's why women have lost their height. There is no reason for them to be of lesser height than men. No reason at all. They have lost their height because only a smaller woman was always chosen. By and by, the thing has entered in their mind so deeply, they have lost their height. They have lost their intelligence, because an intelligent woman was not needed. An intelligent woman was a freak. They have, you will be surprised to know, just in this century, their height is increasing again. And you will be surprised, even their bones are becoming bigger, and their skeleton is becoming bigger. Just within 50 years, particularly in America, and their mind is also going and becoming bigger than it used to be. Their skull is becoming bigger. With the idea of freedom, some deep conditioning has been destroyed. Man already has power, so he need not be very clever, need not be very indirect. Women don't have power. When you don't have power, you have to be more diplomatic. That's the substitute. The only way they can feel powerful is that they are needed, that the man is continuously in need of them. This is not love. This is a bargain. And they are continuously haggling for the price. It is a continuous struggle. C.S. Lewis and Abraham Maslow I say the first kind of love is just a name, a pseudo coin. It is not true. Only the second kind, love, is love. Love happens only when you are mature. You become capable of loving only when you are a grown-up. When you know that love is not a need but an overflow. Being love, our gift love. Then you give without any conditions. The first kind, the so-called love, derives from a person's deep need for another, while gift love, or being love, flows or overflows from one mature person to another out of abundance. One is flooded with it. You have it, and it starts moving around you, just as when you light a lamp, a rays starts spreading into darkness. Love is a byproduct of being. When you are, you have the aura of love around you. When you are not, you don't have that aura around you. And when you don't have that aura around you, ask the other to give love to you. Let it be repeated. When you don't have love, you ask the other to give it to you. You are a beggar. And the other is asking you to give it to him or to her. Now two beggars spreading their hands before each other. And both are hoping that the other has it. Naturally, both feel defeated finally. And both feel cheated. You can ask any husband and any wife. You can ask any lover. They both feel cheated. The other has cheated. Nobody has cheated. It was your projection that the other has it. If you have a wrong projection, what the other can do about it? Your projection has broken. The other did not prove according to your projection, that's all. But the other has no obligation to prove his being according to your expectations. And you have cheated the other, that is the feeling of the other, because the other was hoping love will be flowing from you. You both were hoping love will be flowing from the other. And both were empty. How can love happen? At the most, you can be together miserable. Before, you used to be miserable alone, separate. Now you can be miserable together. And remember, whenever two persons are miserable together, it is not a simple addition, it is a multiplication. Alone you were feeling frustrated. Now you feel together frustrated. One thing is good about it, that you can throw the responsibility now on the other, that the other is making you miserable. That is the good point. You can feel at ease that nothing is wrong with me, the other. What to do with such a wife? Nasty, nagging. One has to be miserable. What to do with such a husband? Ugly. A miser. Now you can throw the responsibility on the other. You have found a scapegoat. But misery remains, becomes multiplied. Now this is the paradox. Those who fall in love don't have any love. That's why they fall in love. And because they don't have any love, they cannot give. And one thing more. An immature person always falls in love with another immature person because only they can understand each other's language. A mature person loves a mature person. An immature person loves an immature person. You can go on changing your husband or your wife 1001 times. You will again find the same type of woman and the same misery repeated in different forms, but the same misery repeated. It is almost the same. You can change your wife, but you are not changed. Now who is going to choose the other wife? You will choose. The choice will come out of your immaturity again. You will choose the similar type of woman again. The basic problem of love is first to become mature. Then you will find a mature partner. Then immature people will not attract you at all. It is just like that. If you are 25 years of age, you don't fall in love with a baby of 2 years. You don't fall. Exactly like that. When you are a mature person, psychologically, spiritually, you don't fall in love with a baby. It does not happen. It cannot happen. You can see that it is going to be meaningless. In fact, a mature person does not fall in love, he rises in love. The word fall is not right. Only immature people fall. They stumble and fall down in love. Somehow they were managing and standing. They cannot manage and cannot stand. They find a woman and they are gone. They find a man and they are gone. They were always ready to fall on the ground and to creep. They don't have the bone, the spine. They don't have that integrity to stand alone. A mature person has the integrity to be alone. And when a mature person gives love, he gives without any strings attached to it. He simply gives. And when a mature person gives love, he feels grateful that you accepted his love. Not vice versa. He does not expect you to be thankful about it. No, not at all. He does not need even your thanks. He thanks you that you accepted his love. And when two mature persons are in love, one of the greatest paradoxes of life happens, one of the most beautiful phenomena. They are together and yet tremendously alone. They are together so much so that they are almost one, but their oneness does not destroy their individuality. In fact, it enhances it. They become more of an individual. Two mature persons in love help each other to become more free. There is no politics involved, no diplomacy, no effort to dominate. How can you dominate the person you love? Just think over it. Domination is a sort of hatred, anger, enmity. How you can even think of dominating a person you love? You would love to see the person totally free, independent. You will give him more individuality. That's why I call the greatest paradox. They are together so much so that they are almost one. But still, in that oneness, they are individuals. Their individualities are not effaced. They have become more enhanced. The other has enriched them as far as their freedom is concerned. Immature people falling in love destroy each other's freedom, create a bondage, make a prison. Mature persons in love help each other to be free. They help each other to destroy their all sorts of bondages. And when love flows with freedom, there is beauty. When love flows with dependence, there is ugliness. Remember, freedom is a higher value than love. That's why in India, the ultimate we call moksha. Moksha means freedom. Freedom is a higher value than love. So if love is destroying freedom, it is not worth. Love can be dropped. Freedom has to be saved. Freedom is a higher value. And without freedom you can never be happy. That is not possible. Freedom is the intrinsic desire of each man, each woman. Utter freedom. Absolute freedom. So anything that becomes destructive to freedom, one starts hating it. Don't you hate the man you love? Don't you hate the woman you love? You hate. It is a necessary evil. You have to tolerate it. Because you cannot be alone, so you have to manage to be with somebody. And you have to adjust with the other's demands. You have to tolerate. You have to bear. Love, to be really love, has to be being love, gift love. Being love means a state of love. When you have arrived home, when you have known who you are, then a love arises in your being. Then fragrance spreads, and you can give it to others. How can you give something that you don't have? To give it, the first basic requirement is to have it. You ask, the love in me is dependent on the outside world, then it is not love. Or, if you want to play with words like C.S. Lewis and A.H. Maslow, then call it need love, deficiency love. It is like calling a disease healthy disease. It is meaningless. It is a contradiction in terms. Deficiency love is a contradiction in terms. But if you are too much attached to the word love, it is okay. You can call it deficiency love or need love. At the same time, I see what you say about being complete within. No, you cannot see it yet. You hear me, you understand it intellectually, but you cannot see it yet. In fact, I am speaking a different language and you understand a different language. I am shouting from a different plane and you are listening from a different plane. Yes, I am using the same words as you use. But I am not like you. So how can I give those words the same meaning as you give them? Intellectually you can understand. And that will be a misunderstanding. All intellectual understanding is a misunderstanding. Let me tell you a few anecdotes. A Frenchman who was visiting Ireland entered a compartment of a train, and in the carriage were two Irishmen who were commercial travelers. One of these said to the other, "And where have ye been lately?" Came the reply, "Sure, and I have not. I just been to Kilmary. And now I am off to Kilpatrick. And what about yourself?" To which the first replied, "I have been to Kilkenny and Kilmichael, and now I am off to Kilmore." The Frenchman listened in amazement, muttering scoundrels, he thought, and got out of the next station. Now listen. Kilmary, Kilpatrick, Kilkenny, Kilmichael, and Kilmore. Kilmore. The Frenchman must have got frightened. Murderous scoundrels. Exactly something like continuously goes on happening. I say something, you understand something else. But it is natural. I'm not condemning it. I'm simply making you aware of it. There were three boys, one called Trouble, one called Manners, and one called Mind Your Own Business. The father was a philosopher, so he had given them very meaningful names. Now it is very dangerous to give people meaningful names. Trouble got lost. So Manners and Mind Your Own Business went to the police station. Mind Your Own Business said to Manners, "Now you wait here outside," and in he went. Inside he said to the copper at the desk, "My friend is lost." The copper said, "What is your name?" "Mind Your Own Business." "Where is your manners?" said the copper. "Outside on the doorstep." "Are you looking for Trouble?" "Yes." "Have you seen him?" This goes on continuously. I say that until you are total within yourself, love will not flow. Of course, you understand the words. But you give those words your own meaning. When I say unless you are total within yourself, I am not proposing a theory. I am not philosophizing at all. I am simply indicating towards the fact of life. I am saying, how can you give if you don't have it? And how can you overflow when you are empty? And love is an overflow. When you have more than you need, only then you can give. Hence it is a gift, love. How can you give gifts when you don't have? This you listen and you understand, but then the problem arises, because the understanding is intellectual. If it has penetrated your being, if you have seen the facticity of it, then the question will not arise. Then you will forget all your dependent relationships and you will start working on your own being. Clearing, cleansing, making your inner core more alert, aware. You will start working that way. And the more you will start feeling that you are coming to a certain totality, you will find side by side, love is growing. It is a byproduct. Love is a function of being total. Then the question will not be there, but the question is there, so you have not seen the fact, you have listened it as a theory. And you have understood it, you have understood the logic of it. To understand the logic is not enough, you will have to have the taste of it. The love in me is dependent on the outside world. At the same time, I see what you say about being complete within. What happens to love if there is nothing and nobody to recognize and taste it? It need not be recognized. It needs no recognition. It needs no certificates. It needs nobody to taste it. The recognition of the other is accidental. It is not essential to love. Love will go on flowing. Nobody tastes it. Nobody recognizes it. Nobody feels happy, delighted because of it. Love will go on flowing. Because in the very flow, you feel tremendously blissed. You feel tremendously rejoicing. In the very flow, when your energy is flowing, you are sitting in an empty room and the energy is flowing and filling the empty room with your love. Nobody is there. The walls will not say thank you. Nobody to recognize, nobody to taste it. But that doesn't matter at all. Your energy releasing, flowing, you will feel happy. The flower is happy when the fragrance is released to the winds. Whether the winds know about it or not, that is not the point. And you ask, who are you without your disciples? I am. Whether disciples are there or not, that is irrelevant. I am not dependent on you. And my whole effort here is so that you can also become independent of me. I am here to give you freedom. I don't want to impose anything upon you. I don't want to cripple you in any way. I want you just to be yourselves. And the day it happens that you are independent of me, you will be able really to love me, not before it. I love you. I cannot help. It is not a question whether I can love you or not. I simply love you. If you are not here, this Chuang Tzu auditorium will be full of my love. It will not make any difference. These trees will still get my love. These words will go on getting it. And even if all trees and all words disappear, that doesn't make any difference. The love will be still flowing. Love is, so love flows. Love is a dynamic energy. It cannot be stagnant. If somebody partakes good, if nobody partakes, that too is good. What God said to Moses, you remember? When Moses encountered God, of course, God has given him few messages to deliver to his people, and Moses is a true Jew. He asked, "Sir, but please tell me your name." And they will ask, "Who has given you these messages?" They will ask God's name, "So what is your name?" And God said, "I am that I am." You go to your people and say that "I am that I am" says so. A message from "I am that I am" looks very absurd. But is of tremendous significance. "I am that I am." God has no name, no definition. Just be. The third question. I don't go anywhere. Why is a map needed? Is not being here now enough? Yes, there is no goal and nowhere to go. And the map is not needed if you have understood me. But you have not understood me. And the map is needed. And the need of the map is not because there is a goal. It is not to go somewhere that the map is needed. The map is needed because you have gone somewhere and you have to come back here now. It is not needed to go somewhere. But you have dreamt, you have gone somewhere. The map is needed to come back home. You have gone astray. You have moved in your imagination, in your desire, in your ambition. You don't look at yourself. Your being is at your back and you are rushing away. The map is needed to look back, to meet your being, to encounter yourself. But if you understand me, that here and now is all that is, you can burn the map. You can throw the map, then the map is not needed for you. One who has arrived home, the map is not needed. But don't burn the map until you have arrived home. There is a famous painting of a Zen monk burning Buddhist scriptures. And somebody asks him, "Master, what are you doing? And you have always thought about these scriptures, and you have been always commenting upon and reflecting upon these scriptures. And why you are burning them?" And the master laughs and he says, "Because I have come home, so the map is not needed." But you should not burn them until and unless you have come home. You carry a map. It is meaningful while you are away. When you have arrived, you throw it. If you throw it before you have arrived, you will be in danger. Yes, now and here is more than enough. Not enough, more than enough. It is all that is there. But you are not here now. So all these maps are needed to bring you home. You have not gone anywhere really, but you are dreaming that you have gone somewhere. These maps are also dream maps. Remember, these maps are dream maps. These maps are as false as your samsara, as your world. The ultimate scripture has no word in it. Sufis have a book, the book of the books. It is simply empty. Not a single word written in it. Down the centuries, it has been given from one master to another, handed over from master to the disciple, and has been kept with tremendous respect. That is the ultimate scriptures. Vedas are not so beautiful, Bible is not so beautiful, Gita is not so beautiful, Quran is not so beautiful, because something is written there. The book of the books is really of tremendous value. But will you be able to read it? When for the first time in the West the Sufis wanted it to be published, no publisher was ready. "What? There is nothing to publish," they will say. "It will be just an empty book. For what to publish it?" The the Western mind can understand the word, the black ink is spread on the white page. He cannot see the white page directly. The white page does not exist for the Western mind, only the black ink. The clouds exist for the Western mind, not the sky. Mind exists for the Western mind, not consciousness. Content exists, but they have completely forgotten the container. Thoughts are just like white, black ink on white paper. Thoughts are just the written message. When thoughts disappear, you will become the book of the book, empty. But that is the voice of God. You say, I don't go anywhere. Why is the map needed? Is not being here now enough? Just because you ask the question, you will still need the map. A question is a question for the map. If you have understood me, there is no question left. Then what is there to be asked? Here and now is enough. What is there to ask? What can you ask about here and now? All asking is asking about goals of somewhere else, then and there. The fourth question, I have been married for 20 years already, and why can't see, understand that feeling is there? And then I have never seen her in my life, and then I am in the middle of a honeymoon, and then my mind goes bananas. Mind always goes bananas. That is the way of the mind. The mind is a flux. It continuously changes. It is not the same for any two consecutive moments. Each moment it is different. Yes. One moment you feel you have not seen your wife your whole life. You have not met her yet, although you have been living with her for 20 years. Another moment you see you are just in the middle of a honeymoon. You have seen her beauty, her grace, her joy, her innermost core, and then it is gone. And the scene goes on changing. The mind is very slippery. It goes on slipping. It cannot stay anywhere. It has no capacity to stand. It is a flux. With the mind, everything is like that. One moment you are happy, another moment you are unhappy. One moment you are so joyful, another moment you are so sad. It goes on and on. The wheel of the mind goes on moving. One moment one spoke is on top, another moment another spoke has come on the top, and this way it goes. That's why in the East we call samsara the wheel. The world is a wheel. It goes on moving, the same wheel, again and again and again. And it is not for a single moment stable. It is like a movie. If for a single moment the movie stops, you will be able to see the screen. But the movie goes on moving, and it is moving so fast that you are engrossed in it, occupied with it. You cannot see the screen, and the screen is the reality. and the pictures projected upon it are just dreams. Mind goes on projecting. I have heard a millionaire entered a post office and saw an elderly couple standing at the counter drying their old age pensions. He was in a good mood. He felt very sorry for the old couple. And he thought they should be given 1 week's holiday to know the beauties and the joys of life. He was in a charity mood. Going up to them, he said, "How would you like to spend a week at my residence? I will give you both a wonderful time." Well, the old couple agreed, and so the millionaire took them off to his house in his Rolls, and as he had promised, saw that they had a really good holiday with excellent food, color television, and many luxuries which they never dreamt they would ever have. At the end of the week, he walked into the library where the old boy was enjoying a quiet time with a glass of wine and smoking a cigar. "Well," he said, "have you enjoyed yourself?" "Indeed I have," the old boy replied, "but can I ask you a question?" "Certainly," replied the millionaire. Then said the other, "Who is the old woman I have been sleeping with all the week?" This will be the situation of people who have lived with their wife, with their husband, their whole life. Who is the woman you have been sleeping with for 20 years? There are moments when you feel you know. There are moments when suddenly there is a China wall. Opaque, dark. You cannot see anything. You don't know who is this stranger here. All our knowing is so superficial. We remain strangers. You can sleep with the woman for 20 years. That doesn't make much difference. You remain strangers. And the reason is, you don't know even yourself. How can you know the others? It is impossible. You are hoping for the impossible. You don't know even yourself. You don't know the man you are. And you have been here in existence for eternity. Millions of lives you have been here. And you don't know yet who you are. So what to say about 20 years? And how can you know the other woman who is far away from you? You cannot enter in her dreams. You cannot enter into her thoughts. You cannot enter into her desires. How can you know her being? Even dreams you cannot know. You may be sleeping with the same woman for 20 years in the same bed, but see dreams, her dreams, you dream, your dream. Your subjectivities remain worlds apart. Even while you are making love to a woman and holding her into your hands, are you really holding the woman who is there? Or you are holding just an imagination, a projection, a shadow? Are you really holding the real woman in your hands? Are just a mind image, a ghost? Do you love this woman who is there? Or you have certain ideas that you love and you find those ideas reflected in this woman? When there are two persons in a bed, my feeling is there are always four persons. Two ghosts lying just in between the both. The woman's projection of the husband and the husband's projection of the wife. It is not accidental that the husbands go on trying to change the wife according to some ideas, and the wife goes on changing, trying at least to change the husband according to some ideas. Those are the two ghosts. You can't accept the woman as she is, can you? You have many improvements to make, many changes. And if it was really possible, if one day God comes to the world and says, okay, now all wives are allowed to change their husbands as they want, or all husbands are allowed to change their wives as they want, what will happen, do you know? The world will go simply crazy. If women are allowed to change their husbands, you will not find a single man left that you can recognize. All old people will be gone. If husbands were allowed to change their wives, then no single woman will be left here as she was. And do you think you will be happy? You will not be. Because then the woman that you have changed and made according to your ideas will not appeal you. She will not have a mystery in her. Look at the absurdities of the mind, the demands of the mind, suicidal demands. If you are able to change your husband and you have become really powerful to change him totally, will you love that man? He will be just something put together by you. He will not have any mystery. He will not have any soul. He will not have any integrity of his own. And he will not have anything to be explored by you. You will lose interest. You will be bored by him. It will be just homemade. What interest? Interest arises only because there is something unknown to be explored, a mystery challenging, an invocation to move into the unfamiliar. First thing, you have not known yourself. How you can know your wife? Not possible. Start by knowing yourself. And this is the beauty of it. The day you know yourself, you will know all, not only your wife, you will know the whole existence. Not only men, but trees and birds and animals, and the rocks, and the rivers and the mountains. You will know all, because you contain all. You are a miniature universe. And another beauty and another incredible experience is, the moment you know yourself, the mystery is not finished. In fact, for the first time, mystery becomes tremendous. You know, and yet you know much is there to be known. You know, and you know that this knowledge is nothing. You know, and yet the boundary is far away. You only enter into the ocean of knowledge. You never reach the other shore. That moment, the whole existence is mysterious. Your wife, your child, your friend. And that knowledge is not destructive of the magic, of the poetry, of life. That knowledge enhances the poetry, the magic, the miracle, the mystery. I have been married for 20 years already, and why can't she understand that feeling is there? Do you understand yourself? Have not you been doing things for which you repent later on, and you say, I have done it in spite of me? Do you understand yourself? Do you do things through understanding? When somebody hits you and you become angry, are you becoming angry with understanding? are just because he has pushed your button. Your knowledge about yourself is so superficial, it is just like a driver. A driver is driving a car. Yes, few things he knows. He can manage the steering wheel. He can manage the accelerator. He can manage the clutch. He can manage the gearbox. He can manage the brake. That's all. Do you think he knows everything about the car? What is hidden under the bonnet is not known at all. And that is the real car. That is where action is. That is where the real thing is happening. And what he is pushing and pulling are nothing but buttons. Sooner or later, these things are going to disappear from cars. They should disappear. They are very primitive. This steering wheel, this accelerator, this brake, they should disappear. They are not needed. A computer can do all that. And then even a small child can drive the car. And there is no need for a license really. But do you understand what is happening inside? When you push a button and the electric light comes on, do you understand electricity? You simply know how to push the button. That's all that you know. I have heard a story. When for the first time electricity came to Vienna, a friend of Sigmund Freud came to visit him. He had never seen electricity. Freud left him in the night in his room to rest. He was very much worried. He could not find a way how to put the light off. He had never seen electricity. He tried hard. He stood on the bed. He tried to blow the light. But he could not find any way how to blow it. And he was afraid to go back and to ask Freud, because that will be too foolish. What these people will think, you cannot even blow a light. You don't know even that much. That will look too much ignorant. And he was from a small village, so they will laugh. And that will be not good. So he covered the lamp with a towel and went to sleep. He couldn't sleep well. Again and again he thought about it. There must be some way. He got up again and again tried. And there was light and it was difficult to sleep. And more than light was this pricking, continuous pricking that I don't know even such a small thing. In the morning when Freud asked him, did you slept well? He said, everything was good, just one thing I had to ask, how to put this light off? And Freud says, you don't know electricity at all, it seems. Come here. Just on the wall was the switch, and you push the switch and the light is off. Then the villager said, so simple, now I know what electricity is. But do you know what electricity is? Do you know what anger is? Do you know what love is? Do you know what happiness, joy is? Do you know what sadness is? Nothing is known. You don't know yourself. You don't know your mind. You don't know your inner being. You don't know how this whole life happens. From where? From where comes the anger? From where comes joy? From where one moment you feel so celebrating and one moment you are ready to commit suicide? Please, why can't she understand that feeling about your wife is natural? How can you understand her? You have not understood even your mind. The day you understand your mind and your being, you have understood all minds and all beings, because the fundamental law is the same. If you can understand a single drop of seawater, you have understood all the seas, past, present, future, of this earth, of another planet. Because once you have understood that it is H2O, you have understood water. Wherever water exists, it will be H2O. Once you have understood your anger, you have understood all the angers of all the human beings ever, past, present, future. If you have understood your sexuality, you have understood all sex. Please don't try to understand the other, that is not the way. Try to understand yourself, that is the way. You are a miniature universe. In you is the whole map of existence. The fifth question: I love my husband, but I hate sex, and that creates conflict. Is not sex animalistic? It is, but man is an animal. As much an animal as any other animal. But when I say man is an animal, I don't mean man is finished with animality. He can be more than the animal. He can be less also. That is the glory of man, the freedom and the danger, the agony and the ecstasy. A man can be far lower than animals, and a man can be far higher than gods. Man has infinite potentiality. A dog is a dog. He remains a dog. He is born a dog and he will die a dog. A man can become a Buddha. And a man can become an Adolf Hitler too. So man is very open-ended on both the sides. He can fall back. Can you find any animal more dangerous than man? More mad than man? Just think of a scene. 50,000 monkeys sitting in a stadium, killing small children, throwing in fire. What you will think about them? Thousands of children are being thrown in fire. A great fire is burning just in the middle of the stadium. And 50,000 monkeys enjoying with joy, dancing, and children are being thrown, their own children. What you will think about these monkeys? Will not you think that the monkeys have gone mad? But this has happened in humanity. In Carthage it happened. 50,000 men burning children. They burned 300 children one time as an offering to their God. Their own children. But forget about Carthage, it is long past. What Adolf Hitler did in this century, of course this is a far advanced century. So of course Adolf Hitler was capable to do more great things than Carthage. He killed millions of Jews. Thousands at a time, will be forced in a chamber and gassed, and hundreds of people will be looking from the outside. Watching through one-way mirrors. What you will think about these people? What type of men? People being gassed, burnt, evaporated, and others are watching. Can you think about animals doing such a thing? During the 3,000 years, man has been through 5,000 wars, killing and killing and killing. And you call sex animalistic? Animals have never done anything more animalistic than man. And you think man is not an animal? Man is an animal. And the idea that man is not animal is one of the hindrances for your growth. So you take it for granted that you are not animals. And then you stop growing. The first recognition has to be this, that I am an animal. And I have to be alert not to be. And I have to be alert to go beyond it. It happened. A man wrote to a country hotel in Ireland to ask if his dog would be allowed to stay there. He received the following answer. Dear sir, I have been in the hotel business for over 30 years. Never yet have I had to call in the police to eject a disorderly dog in the small hours of the morning. No dog has ever attempted to pass off a bad check on me. Never has a dog set the bed clothes alight through smoking. I have never found a hotel towel in a dog's suitcase. Your dog is welcome. And P.S. If he can vouch for you, you can come too. Animals are beautiful, whatsoever they are just innocent. Man is very cunning, very calculating, very ugly. Man can fall lower than the animals, because man can rise higher than man, higher than gods. Man has an infinite potentiality. He can be the lowest and he can be the highest. He has the whole ladder in his being, from the first rung to the last rung. So the first thing I would like to say to you, don't call sex just animalistic. Because sex can only be animalistic, that is possible. But it need not be. It can rise higher. It can become love. It can become prayer. It depends on you. Sex in itself is nothing like a fixed entity. It is just a possibility. You can make it as you like it, as you want it. That is the whole message of Tantra, that sex can become samadhi. That is the vision of Tantra, that sex can become samadhi, that through sex the ultimate ecstasy can enter in you. Sex can become the bridge between you and the ultimate. You say, I love my husband, but I hate sex, and that creates conflict. How can you love your husband and you hate sex? You must be playing on words. How can you love your husband and hate sex? Just try to understand it. When you love a man, you would like to hold his hand too. When you love a man, you would like to hug him sometimes too. When you love a man, you would not only like to hear his sound, you would like to see his face too. When you only hear the sound of your beloved, the beloved is far away. The sound is not enough. When you see him too, you are more satisfied. When you touch him, certainly you are even more satisfied. When you taste him, certainly you are even more satisfied. What sex is? It is just a meeting of two deep energies. You must be carrying some taboos in your mind, inhibitions. What sex is? Just two persons meeting at the maximum point. Not holding only their hands, not hugging each other's body, but penetrating into each other's energy realm. Why you should hate sex? Your mind must have been conditioned by the Mahatmas, the so-called religious people who have poisoned the whole humanity, who have poisoned your very source of growth. Why should you hate? If you love your man, you will like to share your total being with him. There is no need to hate. And if you hate sex, what you are simply saying that you want the man to take care of your finance, to take care of the house, to bring a car to you and a fur coat. You want to use the man, and you call it love. And you don't want to share with him anything. When you love, you share all. When you love, you don't have any secrets. When you love, you have your heart utterly open. You are available. When you love, you are ready to go with him even to hell if he is going to hell. But this happens. We are very expert with words. We don't want to say that we don't love. So we make it look as if we love, and we hate sex. Sex is not all love, that's true. Love is more than sex, that is true. But sex is the very foundation of it. Yes, one day sex disappears. But to hate it is not the way to make it disappear. To hate it is the way to repress it. And whatsoever is repressed will come up one way or other. Please don't try to become a monk or a nun. Listen to this story. The nuns ran an orphanage, and one day the Mother Superior summoned to her office three buxom girls who were leaving and said, "Now you are all going out into the big sinful world, and I must warn you against certain men. There are men who will buy you drinks, take you to the room, undress you, and do unspeakable things to you. Then they give you 2 or 3 pounds and you are sent away ruined." "Excuse me, Reverend Mother," said the boldest one, "did you say these wicked men do this to us and give us 3 pounds too?" "Yes, dear child, why do you ask?" "Well, the priests only give us apples." Remember, sex is natural. one can go beyond it, but not through repression. And if you repress it, you will sooner or later find some other way to express it. Some perversion is bound to enter. You will have to find some substitutes. And substitutes are of no help at all. They don't help. They can't help. And once a natural problem has been turned in such a way that you have forgotten about it, and it has bubbled up somewhere else as a substitute, you can go on fighting with the substitute, but it is not going to help. I have heard a stranger got into a suburban railway carriage in which two men were already sitting. One of them had a peculiar mannerism. He scratched his elbow again and again and again. This elbow scratching was nearly driving the stranger mad. By the time the victim got out of his station, "Gravely afflicted, your friend," he said to the other man. "Yes, indeed, he has got a terrible dose of piles." "I am not talking about piles. I am talking about all that is scratching just now." "Yes, that is right, piles. You see, he is a very religious man and a civil servant too. And that scratching of the elbow is just a substitute." But substitutes never help. They create only perversions, obsessions. Be natural. If you want someday to go beyond nature, be natural. That is the first requirement. I am not saying that is nothing more than nature. There is a higher nature. That is the whole message of Tantra. But be very earthly if you really want to rise high in the sky. Can't you see these trees? They are rooted in the earth. And the better they are rooted, the higher they go. The higher they want to go, the deeper they will have to go into the earth. If a tree wants to touch the stars, the tree will have to go and touch the very hell. That's the only way. Be rooted in your body if you want to become a soul. Be rooted in your sex if you want to become really a lover. Yes, the more energy will be converted into love, less and less need of the sex will be there. But you will not hate it. Hate is not a right relationship with anything. Hate simply shows you are afraid. Hate simply shows there is great fear in you. Hate simply shows that deep down you are still attracted. If you hate love, if you hate sex, then somewhere else your energy will start moving. Energy has to move. Man, if he suppresses his sex, becomes more ambitious. If you really want to be ambitious, you have to suppress your sex. Then only ambition can have energy. Otherwise, you will not have any energy. A politician has to suppress his sex. Then only he can rush towards New Delhi. Sex energy is needed. Repressed sex energy is needed. And great anger is needed. And whenever you are suppressing sex, you are angry at the whole world, you can become a great revolutionary. All revolutionaries are bound to be sexually repressed. When in a better world, sex will be simple, natural, accepted, without any taboo and without any inhibition, politics will disappear and there will be no revolutionaries. There is no need. When a man represses his sex, he becomes too much attached to money. He has somewhere to put his sexual energy. Have you not seen people holding their 100-rupee notes as if they are touching their beloved? Can't you see in their eyes the same lust? But this is ugly. To hold a woman with deep love is beautiful. To hold a 100-rupee note with lust is just ugly. It is a substitute. You cannot deceive animals. A man went to the zoo. He took his son. He wanted to show the son the monkeys there. The son was very much interested. He had never seen the monkeys. They went there, but no monkeys. So he asked the zookeeper, what has happened? Where are the monkeys? And the zookeeper said, this is their love season. So they have gone into the hut. The man was very much frustrated. For months he has been trying to bring the boy. They have traveled long. And now, this is love season. So he asks, if we throw nuts, won't they come out? And the zookeeper said, will you? But I think men can come out if you throw nuts. Man has come out. The zookeeper is wrong. Monkeys will not come, that is certain. If you give them money, they will not come. They will keep your money. Love season is on. Keep your money. And if you say, we can make you the president of India, they will say, you keep your presidentship. Love season is on. But man, if you make him a president, he can kill his beloved. If that is the stake, he can do that. These are substitutes. You cannot befool animals. I have heard the spinster had a parrot who kept repeating, I want to poke, I want to poke. She found this slightly irritating until a married friend explained what it meant. Then she became very alarmed. I love that word, but I will have to get rid of him, or the vicar will never call again, she said. But her more experienced friend said, well, if you really love him, you will get him what he longs for, which is a female. Then he won't keep on about it all the time. Off went the spinster to the bird shop. But the man said, no, I can't do anything right now. No lady. No lady parrots coming in all that season, miss. But I can do you a lady owl at a reasonable price. Anything was better than nothing. So she popped the owl into the parrot's cage and waited with thrilled anticipation. I want to poke, I want to poke, said the parrot. Ooh, ooh, said the lady owl. Not you, you goggle-eyed freak, said the parrot. I can't stand women who wear glasses. Substitutes won't do. Man is living in substitutes. Sex is natural. Money is unnatural. Sex is natural, power, prestige, respectability is unnatural. If you really want to hate something, hate money, hate power, hate prestige. Why hate love? Sex is one of the most beautiful phenomena in the world. Of course, the lowest, that is true. But the higher moves through the lower. The lotus comes out of the mud. Don't hate the mud. Otherwise, how you will help the mud to release the lotus? Help the mud. Take care of the mud so the lotus is released. Suddenly, lotus is so far away from the mud. You cannot even conceive any relationship. If you see a lotus, you cannot believe it comes out of dirty mud, but it comes. It is the expression of the dirty mud. The soul is released from the body. The love is released from sex. Sex is a body thing. Love is a spiritual thing. Sex is like mud. Love is like lotus. But without the mud, the lotus is not possible. So don't hate the mud. The whole tantra message is simple. It is very scientific and it is very natural. The message is that if you really want to go beyond the world, go into the world deeply, fully alert, aware. And the last question, beloved Bhagwan, I have many questions, but each time a voice inside me says, don't ask, find out for yourself. But now it is too much, because I don't know where this voice is coming from. The question is from Dharma Chetana. Can't you recognize my voice? Enough for today.